The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So thinking about what to talk about today, I thought, putting the Dharma into practice. We can read about it, we can hear about it. How do we actually practice it? You know? Because there can be a disconnect between hearing the Dharma, that sounds great, and actually our daily life. You know, we do our meditation, leap up, and drown in the things of the day. So how do we actually practice it? How do we use it to help us in our own life, with our own situation, our problems, shortcomings, joys and sorrows, and all that? Well, there's always different ways of looking at the Dharma, as we know. There's the Four Noble Truths, there's the Noble Eightfold Path, there's the precepts, there's the six paramitas or perfections, giving, precepts, patience, effort, meditation, wisdom, the four wisdoms, charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. The 12 steps of divinity origination, which I will not go into, and more. And each of these is a way in. You don't have to understand all of them. You don't have to understand most of them, actually, but to find something that actually helps you to find a way in to putting the Dharma into practice in your daily life is a huge blessing. To help us make sense of our life in a wiser and kinder way. We all would like to do that. Well, the Buddha was very practical. His teachings were to be practiced. You come along, you try it out. He said, come and see. You know, he wasn't trying to impose something on people. He said, come and try it out. And they were not just a philosophical way of looking at things. They were something to help us in our life. Even all this thousands of years later, they're still completely pertinent. And one of my favorite teachings is the three characteristics, the three marks of existence. Many of us have heard of them. I've often talked about them. I love them because they're simple, they're approachable. You can immediately know what they mean, except anatta is a bit difficult. But impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, no separate self in anything. They all work together and they can really help us with our life. They help us to let go of our suffering in all the ways we create it. Simple and profound and direct. First one, anicca, impermanence. We all can see this in our life. Nothing stays the same. Nothing is we can be cling on to and keep forever. Everything changes. Everything comes and goes. We try to cling on to things. We clutch on to people, things, situations, our circumstances. We don't want things to change because we like them the way they are. Thank you. Even if they're uncomfortable, we hang on to them. You know, even if it's misery, better the devil you know than the devil you don't. So, but this is suffering, to cling on to things, because they're going to pass away. They're not going to last forever. Neither are we. We lose things. Our lives change. We're separated from the people we love. They leave us, or they die, and we die eventually. There's a good chance of that. We try to have some control over our lives, but it doesn't work. You know, we can't even control our own body. It's going to get old, sick, and die. And we may not want that. You can't stop the flow of impermanence. Everything comes into being, lasts for a while, and passes away. You know? All the things and people in our lives, all the circumstances, all the things we like, and the things we don't like, all eventually pass. So the things we don't like pass away too. There's a little bright side to this. You know, it's not just misery at all, actually. It's actually a blessing. Even seemingly permanent things, like our beautiful Mount Shasta, it changes all the time. It's got snow on it now. In the summer, it doesn't. It wasn't always here, thousands of billions of years ago, however long. It was not there. Then it rose. It's erupted a couple of times, I think, a few times. Eventually, it'll probably erupt again, or it'll get eroded away. It'll be gone. It looks like it's permanent, but it's not. Everything is changing all the time, whether we see it or not. We change all the time. We're constantly changing. Our minds change all the time. Our feelings change all the time. Our bodies change all the time. Everything's changing, and when we try to cling on to things and keep them the way they are, we suffer because it doesn't work. And this brings us to our second of the three characteristics, dukkha, which is a very subtle term and has a variety of meanings. Some people translate it as suffering. Life is suffering. The Buddha never said that. He said there is suffering. Or you could call it stress, unsatisfactoriness. You know, people just not being happy with the way things are. I think more like stress is a good expression, actually, because stress is not fun, really. And we all experience stress. We all experience discomfort, unsatisfactoriness in various things, partly because of impermanence, because a nice thing we have gets broken, scratched, lost, falls apart, whatever it might be. The people we love immediately may not always be that way. You know, sometimes things change. Even if you love somebody forever and ever, you know, have a really happy relationship throughout our lives, eventually we will die or they will die. You know, nothing lasts forever. And so there's unsatisfactoriness and downright suffering. And sometimes we undergo deep suffering in our life. We might lose the people we love, have a very painful illness, or they do, you know. All kinds of misfortunes can happen. War, you know, fire that takes our home away, or all kinds of horrible things happen to people. And when then we have some kind of real sorrow, it can make us question everything in our life. You know, what's it all for? How can I make sense of things? What is happening? You know, why is this happening to me? And then we might think, how do I work with this? How do I find a way to deal with this? How do I make sense out of it? How can I find some peace of heart in the midst of this? And this can bring us to the Dharma. Many of us may be here just because of that very thing, because there's been suffering in our life, and we want to find some way to deal with it. How do I make sense of this? How do I deal with it? And the Buddha said, I teach two things, suffering and the end of suffering, or stress and the ending of stress. Because he knew that people had suffering and stress in their lives, and he showed us how to deal with it. A deeply compassionate person. Some of us have dreadful suffering, and some of us don't, but we're just not happy, just not content. Unsatisfactoriness of life. We may not even know why. We just know we're not really happy. Life isn't what we hoped it would be. We can't seem to be content with life as it is presented to us. There must be more to life than this. You know, what's it all for? Or we just have a sense of unease. And this is all because of dukkha, the unsatisfactoriness of life. We all experience it, actually, although we may not always realize it. Some people don't even notice that actually life is kind of not really satisfactory. We pursue things we want and think that'll make me happy, and it doesn't. But when we notice it, we notice that actually this is just all it's cracked up to be, you know, that we might start looking for something more, something to help us make sense of it and find some peace. Well, the unsatisfactoriness comes from wanting things to be different. We want to be happy. We want to have joy. We want to have security and safety. We want to have the things we like and the people we love. Well, of course we do. Everybody does. And we don't want to have things we don't like, the people we don't love, the situations that make us afraid or unhappy. We're always wanting this and not wanting that. And it's completely understandable. We spend a lot of time trying to get what we want and avoid what we don't want. And this creates stress and suffering. There's also the unsatisfactoriness of our own body. You know, as I said, it's changing all the time. Pain, aging, sickness, death. And we're all subject to all of these things. The body is our most obvious source of suffering. Even when we're young, we get hurt, we get sick, we can die, you know. The body is very fragile and vulnerable, no matter who we are. This all sounds pretty negative, but it's going to get better. If we compare what we have with what we want, you'll never be content. I have this, but I want something more. I want something else. I want something different. I want a different kind of life. I want different circumstances, a different body. I want to be young and pretty again, not old and crabby and ugly like me. But it's not going to work, you know. And if you can stop clinging to that and just accept things as they are, yes, we have this body, we have this mind, for what it is worth, to accept things as they are. We can be basically content and bright-minded, even in quite difficult circumstances. Doesn't mean we don't try to change things that need to be changed. But sometimes you can't change things. We can only change them a little bit. And until then, you know, just to accept what we have and not keep wanting something different, which is suffering. Then we have anatta, no separate self in anything. Nothing has a complete, independent, separate existence, including us. And this can be really hard to grasp. Because it looks as though things are solid and real. This is a chair, it looks like a chair, it feels like a chair, we all think it's a chair. And it is a chair, for what it's worth. But it's changing all the time. And it is not just a chair, it's something made out of trees, it will eventually fall apart, and so will I. Everything is impermanent, as I said. Nothing lasts forever, because everything is connected to everything else. There is nothing that just started by itself without some cause. And everything is subject to other things. We're all constantly affected by all the things around us, the people around us, the things that happen to us, not some little permanent, eternal self that lasts forever, unchanging. This is the thing that really sets Buddhism apart from other things. This is a dramatic change. The Buddha was actually revolutionary in this one aspect particularly, that there isn't a separate eternal self or soul. That actually we're just temporary. We don't have a fundamental, unchanging, completely separate existence. Yes, here we are, we do the best with our life, you know, there's somebody over there, I know who they are, yes, we all agree that to that person, we all agree I'm a me, well, but I'm not really a me, I think I'm a me. It's memory, really, I think, it makes us who we think we are. If we have no memory, we wouldn't know who we were. People who have amnesia, sometimes, you know, they don't know who they are. They can become a really nice person having been crabby before, or vice versa. They don't remember. And it's just remembering that past thing, I think, it makes us feel like a self. No lasting separate self in us, or in anybody, or anything. Everything is in a constant flow. We're all part of that constant flow of Buddha nature, actually. We're all just a little part of that. We're not separate in any way at all. But we think we are, and that's what causes us suffering. Thinking I'm a me and I have to be, protect this me and give it what it wants and so forth. All we can really do is to accept that we are part of this flow. Accept the things that happen to us and work with them as best we can. Trying to resist it all does not work and it just creates suffering. But if we accept everything is interconnected, nothing is a separate, forever enduring thing. And this is a huge blessing because it can help us to start to let go. No separate self, no eternal soul. We have, you know, we just do our best from day to day, year to year. We're constantly changing. Moment by moment, we change. We just feel like a continuing self. And this teaching of no separate self is a dramatic thing for the Buddha. It's actually fundamental to the whole of his teaching, because if there's no separate self, then everything else actually kind of falls apart. All the things that we create, all our constructs, all the imaginations that we have, all the ways we want to be, all the things we want, it all kind of tends to dissolve a bit when there isn't this clinging to a me, a self. Well, the Buddha taught extensively about the self not being a real thing in all kinds of different ways. All the things of, you know, the skandhas and the teachings about all sorts of, I'm not going to go into them, there's lots of them. And they all point to the fact that actually we're just a collection of aggregates, a collection of the body, the mind, the feelings, the consciousness, and so forth, will, or the elements, the four elements of earth, water, fire, and wind, the way they saw them in the old days, all these different ways of looking at me, and none of it actually really holds together very well. You take out one thing and all the rest just, you know. The body and mind, you know, they're interdependent, they're not separate. Nothing that I can call me. Because if I'm my body, well, where in the body am I exactly? You know? Reverend Master had this teacher when she was young, actually, a Theravada teacher, who said, well, where is the body? He had this little skeleton, pretend skeleton. Is it in the arm? Is it in the head? Is it in the, you know, the ribs? Is it in the leg? Well, no, you can't find it anywhere. And if I was my body, then why can't I stop it getting old and sick and dying, as we said? And then there's the mind, even more iffy. If I'm my mind, what happens when I'm sleeping? Is it gone? Am I dead? Do I have no mind, you know? And what part of the mind am I exactly? Is it my memory? Is it my feelings? Is it my thoughts? Is it my consciousness? What is it? None of these things can exist independently. Our mind doesn't exist with, you know, independent of the body, and vice versa. If our body has no mind, then it's dead. This idea of a self does have a purpose. It helps us get through our life, helps us to survive in the world. You need to have some sense of being a being just to get around and do things. But then we get stuck with it. We think, I am this me. And not only that, I want to be self, I want to be the other self, I want to be comfortable, I want to have what I want, and what I want is more important than anything else. Because I am, of course, the center of the universe. And we all kind of feel a bit like that. I'm the center of the, you know, I'm the center of everything really, and everything is about me. But actually, it's not. It's not about me. Each of us is just a being. We're not a special thing. What a relief. I don't have to be the special thing. I don't have to be the best person, or the worst person, or the nicest person, or the kindest person, or the richest person, or the... It's just exhausting. We don't have to be any of that. We can just be a person, a regular, ordinary person, trying to do our best in this difficult world. That's all. We just have to do that. Doing our best. And to follow the teaching of the Buddha helps us to do that. It helps us to let go of being a me, you know, of being the center of everything. Very tiring. Well, as I said, all this can sound a bit negative, you know. Everything's impermanent, everything is a lot of suffering, and now we don't even have a self. But it's liberating, because there's a whole lot of things we can let go of, which is can be scary in thought, but actually it's freeing. It frees us to loosen the grip on what we want and we don't want. I don't have to have everything I want. I can actually learn to accept the things I don't like, accept suffering, the terrible things that happen to us that we wish would never happen. They do happen sometimes. Sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. All you can do is accept it and live with it and do your best. And sometimes the suffering helps us to be kinder to other people who are suffering. If we have great sickness, we can be much more sympathetic to other people who are ill. Or we've had some loss. We know that that's like, you know. And when they had the Paradise Fire, and people lost everything they had. A few years later, there was another fire in another town, and the young people of Paradise got together and gave them things, because they knew what it was like to lose everything. But other people who'd never been through that wouldn't think of that. But these young people knew what it's like to lose all your everything you have. And they got things together and gave them to the others. I thought it was really nice, the others. So, If I can see the impermanence of things, and that they aren't the true source of contentment and peace, then I don't have to become afraid or unhappy when I don't get them or they're taken away. I can begin to let go of clinging on to things. Easier said than done, of course. We think, oh, I don't have to have anything. And then grasp, you know, but not that. But we can begin to see how our clinging leads to suffering. The more we try to hold on to something, the more we suffer, because inevitably it won't last forever, you know. And the more fearful and miserable we become when we try to cling on to things, trying to cling on to people, situations, anything, our own body and mind, you know. And if you can see that clutching and just gently relinquish the grip a little bit, we can breathe more freely and just not be so afraid or miserable. We can face the inevitable changes in our lives with courage. This is impermanence. This is unsatisfactoriness. This is stressful. I don't like it, but it's impermanent. It might go away. You know? You can look on the bright side. And I don't have to have everything the way I want it. There's nothing I can hold on to, and it's not all about me. Well, this is all very well, but how do we actually practice it? You know? How do we really put into practice this teaching of the three characteristics? Impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, no separate self. Well, what I do, when I see myself clutching onto something, wanting some outcome, worrying about it not happening, if I can notice that, oh, you know, well, I might have some idea about how things should, I know this is how it should be. I know. This is how it should be. Everybody else is wrong. You know. It's only an idea. And well, I'm wrong. You know, sometimes things are much better. If it isn't, I don't get my way, my idea. Somebody else has a much better way of doing things. I don't have to cling on to what I want or what I think is best. It's only an idea. You know, I don't really know. I don't know what it'll be like. I don't know how things will turn out. Some things turn out much better than I thought when it isn't what I wanted, which is good. And I try to notice in my mind kind of get stuck with something, wanting something, some outcome or something, or getting upset about something, you know, having some kind of an agenda and this is not working, or I don't like this, or I feel a bit impinged on. But I can notice that and see that there's a self in there. This self doesn't like this. It doesn't want to be impinged on. It doesn't want people telling it it's not that great. It doesn't want people to be just getting on with their lives without completely without reference to me, you know. Well, we can see our mind do that and say, oh, here we are again. Yes, just be patient. Just let it go. Just be patient. It's a wonderful training to have things not go the way we want, because we have to practice patience. We have to let go. Otherwise, we just continue to suffer over, oh, it isn't what I wanted. Oh, I don't like it. Oh, I want something else. And it's a misery. But if you can just say, okay, this is what I have now, then it's a whole lot better. We can accept the things that we need to accept and work with them. You know? Relinquishing the grip, we can breathe more freely and just face things with more courage and calmness, stillness, and faith, actually. But to recognize, this is impermanence. This is unsatisfactoriness. And there isn't a self in any of it. And we can see the suffering we create for ourselves if you look and see what we're up to and relinquish the grip a little bit at least. Worrying about something, wanting something, or not wanting something else. Coming back to faith in what is really important. It's not me. I'm not the one who's most important. Things are as they are. Things will be as they will be. It's not all about me. It's not all about what I want at all, just as well. What I want or don't want isn't actually very important. You know? I'm not all that important. I'm just a person, just another person. I don't have to be something special. And as I said, often things turn out much better when they aren't what I want. I just, oh, there's a blessing here. People who have illness often find that actually it turns out to be a blessing in their life, because it teaches them they've got to see things in a different way, accept things in a different way. Oh, my wonderful career is not the most important thing. It's much more important that I practice kindness, or I sympathize with other people, or I learn wisdom, or learn something more about myself, rather than just having this wonderful career that I thought was so great. You know, often things like that happen. And if I'm clutching onto something, but it goes away, or something else happens, if I'm paying attention, I can stop complaining to myself, it's not what I wanted, and just see it from a bigger perspective, you know. Widen the view, not just about me and what I want. Oh, there's a whole lot more going on. A whole lot more people. There's people all around me, you know. Imagine that. And I'm not separate from them in any way. I'm just one of them. To soften that little shell of me and everybody else. And this is part of the teaching of no separate self. We're not separate in any way at all. We breathe, you know, air comes in and out. Food goes in and out. Water goes in and out. Everything just comes through us, nothing separate at all. Our very cells and our bodies are constantly changing, and, you know. Seeing from a bigger perspective. To let go of those little things we cling on to and just practice acceptance. Just not getting too worried about those little things we thought were so important. Getting the little thing I wanted. It's not such a big deal. I can live without it. What a relief. I don't have to have everything I want, you know. I don't have to keep trying to get things the way I want them. And the more we do that, the more we remember to come back to seeing how we cling on, how we try to get things the way we want them, and we can relinquish the grip. Very, very helpful. It's not called practice for nothing, because we have to keep practicing it. Because it's not easy, and we forget, you know. Great compassion, relinquishing the clinging to the suffering, and seeing the bigger perspective. Well, we all want to train ourselves. We all want to, you know, be accepting and content and be kind and let go of our suffering. We all want to be good people and help the world and all. So what gets in the way of that? You know, we forget. The self arises. We want something. I want something. Or I want an outcome. We get caught up in this little tiny view. We have to have this. And we miss the bigger picture. What am I doing here? I'm bulldozing people aside to get what I want. Or I'm, you know, pushing people to do what I think they should do. Or I'm struggling to get something. But actually, it may not be good for me. You know, have to have it our way. We don't have to have it our way. You know. Overwhelmed by the details of our life, that little thing, you know, sort of drowning in the details, just not noticing that actually I'm being a pain to myself and others, trying to get this thing done or whatever it is, thinking we're doing the best thing, and actually may not be the best thing. Nobody wants it, you know. Does happen. And then we say, oh yes, you know, I want to let go of all my selfishness and my anger and everything, and then 5 minutes later we're steaming about something. It's, you know, it happens all the time. It's, yes, I really want to train myself, and then we're pulled off. Just to keep coming back. To have patience with that. Have compassion for our foibles and our shortcomings. We're not going to be patient and be perfect all at once. It takes a long time to transform our mind, to transform our selfishness. Because that's what it comes down to, actually. My selfish views, my selfish wants, me as the center of the world. And to just keep letting go of that. When we see it, when we start to suffer, very often, not always, but very often, there's a self at the bottom of it, wanting something else. I want something else. I don't want it this way. You know, suffering, self. We all have our self-partiality. Our selfish view. We're not bad people, we just have a self. We all do. And we just have to keep recognizing it and working with it and not letting it lead us by the nose everywhere. Because that's what causes suffering in little ways and in catastrophic ways. Selfishness causes suffering. And to finding ways to remind ourselves to come back, to remember the bigger picture, to take a breath, not to get all caught up in the little thing that we want. You know, mindfulness, trying to take those moments when we're quiet, when walking somewhere, just having a quiet cup of tea, or just a breath between one thing and another. Driving to work, washing the dishes. Just do that wholeheartedly and not be all caught up in the thing that we're worried about, you know. Easier said than done. In meditation, you know, coming back. And not judging ourselves for not doing it perfectly. I don't think anybody does it perfectly. If they do, I haven't met them yet. Certainly not me. Just trying to come back, do the best we can with what we have. When we're upset, see, we're upset. Why am I really upset? I'm upset because I'm not getting what I want. I'm upset because I don't like this. I am upset because I'm worried about what's going to happen. In fact, it might turn out fine, you know. But to see that, because at the bottom of it is a self wanting something different. To remember the most important thing, we're all part of Buddha nature. Everything is part of Buddha nature. This isn't just a nice phrase, it's actually the reality. We're all part of that, and there's nothing we can do about it except try to live in harmony with it, to understand it, to live, well, we can't understand it, but to live from truth, to live as though we knew that we are not a separate little being. And then eventually we come to know that for ourselves. I'm not a separate little being. I'm not separate from anybody or anything. And to keep coming back to that, having faith in that, and remembering that it's not about me. It's not about who I think I am. It's about that which is much greater than we are. And that's what we're looking for, to live in harmony with that. And we can do it. And that's our talk for the day. Thank you, retreat guests, for being with us. I hope you'll all come again. And thank you, everybody, for being here on this snowy morning.